Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. If this is your first time streaming or downloading the program, Guelph Politicast is an interview show where I talk to politicians, activists, and people of note making a difference or just trying to make life in the Royal City more interesting. For previous episodes of Guelph Politicast, you can find them on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today I talk to Lindsay Butcher, the executive director of the Shore Center in Kitchener. SHORE stands for Sexual Health Options Resources Education, and according to their mission statement, they promote choice through accurate sexual health education and confidential pregnancy options support. So as you can imagine, that puts them at something of cross purposes with the present Ontario government, who are looking to revamp sex ed and punish any teacher that doesn't present the information they deem appropriate. Sex fact and sex fiction is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. I've been thinking a lot lately about the time I went to a protest outside Liz Sandals' office in 2015. There were a lot of people there organized by Guelph and area Right to Life who were riled up about the update to the province's health curriculum, and specifically the sex education portions of that curriculum. The thing that stuck out to me was talking to the spokesperson, who wasn't able to articulate any objection beyond the well-worn talking points or explain in any detail why the 1998 curriculum was preferable. I was then on a Reddit forum a couple of weeks ago, and in a thread about the Ford government's action on repealing the 2015 curriculum, someone asked a pertinent question. Is there any sex ed program that 100% of the people are going to find acceptable? That protest and that question firmed up in my mind the problem with this debate for the last 3 years. We have one group of people that don't like an open and honest discourse about sexual health and sexual education, and they are holding the rest of the province hostage. Smartphones, sexting, gay marriage, Wi-Fi, consent, Me Too, revenge porn, trans rights, these are all things that weren't around or openly embraced or even discussed back in 1998. And the strange thing is that some experts in sex education are of the opinion that the 2015 update of the curriculum is already itself outdated. And now we're going backwards. Some of those experts work at the Shore Center in Kitchener, which was founded in 1972 and was originally named Planned Parenthood Kitchener-Waterloo before becoming Planned Parenthood Waterloo Region. Shore runs hundreds of sex ed workshops a year and cooperates with several boards of education in our region, including here in Guelph and Wellington. With a lot of confusion in terms of what teachers will be teaching in the fall and what they might not be allowed to teach, it seems like Shore will be more busy than ever with their educational programs in the coming school year. So on this week's episode of the Guelph Politicast, we talk to Butcher about the work of Shore, the challenges that teachers are facing this fall, and the challenges in building a sex education curriculum that most people can have faith in. And we also talk about the effect of a lack of appropriate sex education on the development of young people. We also talk about the politics, difficulty some parties have in believing the science, and we debunk some of the misinformation about the 2015 curriculum as Butcher reinforces the role of parents in any effective sex education program. But just a quick note before we begin, this interview was actually recorded about an hour or so after news broke about the Ford government's approach to teaching sex ed this fall, including the what some have called snitch line for parents to report teachers not following in the government's example. So we don't get into that much in terms of the changes or what that announcement entailed, although we do touch on it a bit in the interview, and I just wanted to make that note. So I caught up with Lindsay Butcher last week by phone from her office in Kitchener. So Lindsay Butcher, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
To begin with, could you explain a bit about Shore's role in sex education in terms of what you do that's either separate from or complementary to what kids receive in public school?
Sure. So SHORE stands for Sexual Health Options, Resources, and Education. So it's in our education department that we help teachers and schools deliver the updated sex ed curriculum, the 2015 version. But we've been delivering sexual health education in Waterloo Region for the past 45 years. So we are very well aware of the older versions of the curriculum and what a difference the newer version of the curriculum has made for students. Last year, we delivered 263 sex ed workshops in public schools, reaching thousands of students from grade 4 all the way up to grade 12.
Wow. I guess that doesn't count weekends and summer vacations, but that's mm-hmm. That's basically sounds like one a day. I didn't do the math in my head.
Yeah, so we have three full-time staff, and all they do is education, and okay. So they're often doing several workshops a day. They'll go into a school and do, you know, all of grade 5 or all of grade 6 in one day.
Okay.
They'll just go from period to period teaching each new class. And then we also do quite a bit of work out in the community. So we work at youth shelters, multicultural groups, groups for youth who are involved in the criminal justice system or who are young parents. So we do sex ed sort of in a very broad range of groups out in the community here in Waterloo Region. And we are slowly expanding into Guelph Wellington.
Okay. Because there is obviously no Shore office in our city, so that would be why the expansion.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted to start with, it may sound combative a little, but just, you know, since the curriculum started coming up, the revised curriculum started coming up and being discussed and debated, there was a very immediate protest and you know, it became a political hot potato fairly quickly amongst mm-hmm. a certain constituency, and they were out in force. And one of the things I've noticed now is that it's the opposite now, as the new Ontario government is looking at has suspended that curriculum and is now looking to create their own new revised curriculum, that we see the people in favor of the sex ed, the 2015 update, coming out and protesting and demonstrating. That includes teachers too. So I guess what I'm wondering is, where was this outpouring when the other side was taking to the streets? And I'm not meaning to blame or castigate anyone, but it just seems like there was a lot of quiet support for updating this curriculum that maybe wasn't heard or wasn't heard as loudly as the other side.
Yeah, and we see that with many progressive issues, that often people may just sort of accept or be complacent and think mm-hmm. that these rights aren't under threat. We have the same issue around the right to abortion,
mm-hmm.
Where people sort of feel like it's a given now and not realize that it could just be one election away where those rights could be threatened. And we've been able to see that play out when it comes to comprehensive sexual health education, that it can just be one election away before these rights are rolled back. And so we do need to remain vigilant at all times and really listen to political parties and candidates when they do talk about our human rights, and believe them when they say they're going to do what they're going to do. So during the election, they were very clear. It was one of the very first campaign announcements that they made, that they would be repealing the curriculum. And I don't think people took that threat seriously and just didn't see it as the significant issue that it would become. And sure enough, on day one of the legislature, that was one of the first decisions they made, was to announce that they would be repealing the curriculum in September. So I think it's a lesson for us all that we can't be complacent. We do need to be engaged politically and to recognize that, you know, many of our human rights and the rights that, you know, for generations people have fought for, that we really are just one election away from moving backwards.
Right. Speaking of where we are right now, though, I know that there's a lot of confusion out there among teachers in terms of what they're going to be teaching in September. But we've also seen a lot of teachers saying, well, this is a curriculum. It's valid. It was, you know, peer reviewed. There's really no point in not teaching it. So, in Waterloo Region, I know there was a meeting about this a couple of nights ago at the school board about what's going to be happening. But, you know, it's the school year keeps getting closer and closer, and there's no clarity on what teachers are going to be teaching. So what are you hearing?
So I attended the school board meeting on Monday evening, and what the director of education said was that they were just going to maintain the course until they do receive instruction from the Ministry of Education. So to date, there has been no formal notice provided to school boards across the province concerning the curriculum. It's all been statements in the media or in the legislature. There has been nothing that has been sent out to educators across the province to clarify exactly what the expectations are for the coming school year. And so our director of education was very clear that until notice is received, that they would just continue with the status quo, which is the 2015 updated curriculum. And then once the memo is received, they would then take it from there. What we were hoping for Monday night was that they would take a stronger position and say, because we do feel the memo is imminent, like it will arrive eventually, and the curriculum will be repealed. I have lost hope that they're going to change their mind. I really think they are going to stick to that commitment. And so what I was hoping from our local board, at least, was that they would join some of the other boards across the province and say, we are going to support the teachers in our board to maintain the 2015 curriculum. They won't be disciplined, and they will receive the same type of curriculum supports that they have in the past. They chose not to pass that motion. So that was quite disappointing, but we're hopeful that if a memo does come down, that they could hold another meeting and post and approve a motion standing in support of teachers teaching modern sexual health education.
I understand why you would probably want a stronger stance, but do you think this is partially, perhaps from the school board's point of view, because you know they have to work with the ministry on a broad range of issues and not just health education and sex ed, but you know, what it sounds like is that the minister and her message is that she's not entirely sure. And there was that confusing back and forth with, I think it was with City News about, you know, teaching the 2014 curriculum when there's no such thing. You know, are they just playing it safe, do you think, that, you know, maybe if we don't poke at the bear, it won't realize that we're still there and it's still hungry?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I'm sure they had their reasons, but even at the board meeting on Monday night, one of the trustees also brought up the 2014 curriculum. And in the audience, we're now allowed to speak, and it was so frustrating for them to say, you know, don't worry, the 2014 curriculum is still going to be taught. The minister said so. Without realizing that the 2014 curriculum, there's no such thing. That's the 1998 curriculum. That's just political spin that they're using to try to confuse the issue,
right.
And it was just so disappointing to see that spin did work. And here we have an elected trustee who read that statement from the minister and said, we don't need to take any action. The minister has been quite clear. We're going to teach the 2014 curriculum, confusing it, thinking that it's the 2015 curriculum.
Right.
And I think that was a very deliberate ploy on their part, and it's just sad to see that people are buying it.
Let me ask you this, and I realize you probably don't know what every sex ed teacher teaches, but given that it was, you know, 20 some odd years, 15, 20 years between, you know, the official changes in the curriculum, what leeway do teachers have to, you know, before the new curriculum was revised in terms of talking about things like, you know, sexting or revenge porn or these kind of things that students were facing well before the curriculum was updated?
So the 1998 version of the curriculum is very vague.
Right.
It's very brief. It just says some very non-specific kind of learning objectives, like students will learn about healthy relationships. And that's all it says. The 2015 curriculum had teacher prompts and resources and language and how to phrase certain things. So it was a lot more support for teachers, especially those who aren't necessarily comfortable talking about this.
Right.
It gave them a lot more confidence because they could say, if a student asks me about this, these are some phrases that are age-appropriate, that are evidence-based, that I'm allowed to say and I won't get in trouble. Because that's what people are afraid about when they teach sex ed, is I don't want to get in trouble. And so they had, it was a really dense document, very thoroughly researched, vetted by experts in the area of pediatrics and sexual health, and doctors. Like, so many people reviewed this material before it was released to make sure that it was the best information we could be giving kids. And so teachers had that confidence that if a student asked a question, they knew exactly how they could answer it.
Right.
Now, because the curriculum's gone back to 1998, it's like open season. Teachers could be responding from their own personal values. They could possibly not have the most accurate information. And that can cause some real harm. You know, if a child asks about anal sex and they don't know how to respond to that, that could shame a gay student.
Right.
Without them realizing. You know, I don't think teachers can understand the amount of harm that can go into how, if sex ed is taught badly.
Sure.
You know, kids live with that shame and that stigma and know that's not a safe adult I can talk to. And it can create some real harm. So there will, certainly before 2015, there were amazing teachers who were adapting the 1998 curriculum, who were supplementing, who were creative, who were doing their own research.
Right.
But I'm not naive enough to think that every teacher is going to do that.
Or that every teacher has the time to
Exactly. Especially when we're talking about elementary and middle school, these teachers are expected to teach every grade.
Right.
And so their specialty may be in math, and that's wonderful, but they also need to be able to teach sex ed, so why not give them every single tool they can? Because we recognize, like, these are tough conversations to have, especially with someone else's kids.
Mm.
Like, this is really kind of uncomfortable for adults to do, so why not give them, and I'm sure parents would feel more secure if they knew, because they can read the curriculum too. They'll know
right.
exactly what the teacher is allowed to say and how they're going to phrase it so that they can prepare their child as well. And they can be a real partner in this instead of, you know, not really understanding what's going on in the school, which happened with the 1998 curriculum because it was just so vague. Teachers could really, you know, say anything.
Yeah, it seems to me that that's theoretically for people, because one of the counterarguments to this is that parents are being left out, but it seems to me that, you know, it's fairly easy to access, or it was. I'm not sure if it's still available on the ministry website.
It's still available.
Oh, is it?
Click on, like, sex ed curriculum, it's still the 2015 version on the website.
Interesting.
And they still have not posted the 1998 version.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like such a priority, but it seems like been such a half-hearted effort. And I don't know if the protest has something to do with that. But what I was trying to get to is the parents' portion of it, because also not just the parents' portion of it, but the misunderstanding. Because I've talked to people who were protesting the changes outside the Guelph MPP's office, who was at the time the Minister of Education.
Mm-hmm.
She it seemed like she hadn't read it, the curriculum, at all, and she was going on things that she had been told from peers, from groups who were politically against the curriculum, and even something as basic as what's taught in grade ones, the proper name of genitals and body parts. It seems, you know, that she was dead set against that, as sort of innocent as that is. And I guess what my curiosity is, this isn't a battle over education, really. It seems like a battle over ideology, and that seems very much harder to win.
Yeah, it certainly has become political. Very much so. And really, I think the people who were opposed to the 2015 curriculum,
mm-hmm.
if they read the 1998 curriculum, they would be just as opposed.
Mm.
Because I think you're right. I think it's fundamentally they are opposed to children learning about their body, their sexual health, and about relationships from anyone other than their parents.
Right.
And I think that's just like that is an ideological viewpoint. I don't think it was about specific content necessarily, because even in the 1998 curriculum, we talk about children knowing the names of all their body parts.
Mm.
It doesn't explicitly say including genitalia, but that was the inference, was that they would know all the names of their body parts.
Right.
As basic health. You need to be able to tell someone if something's hurting, if something's not working.
Right.
And we also know, of course, that a huge protective factor against sexual abuse is for children to know the names of their body parts.
Right. It also, you know, it occurs to me these people are against sexualizing children, but they themselves are doing the sexualizing because, you know, a penis and a vagina still have functions beyond
yes.
the sexual.
Mm-hmm. And if you treat them normal,
right.
like a normal part of their body, then they don't have the shame and sort of the stigma around them that is overtly sexual.
Right.
And that's, I mean, we have all the research that shows that. So I think certainly, like, the groups that oppose any type of sexual health education, it's not just the 2015 version or aspects of the 2015 version.
Sure.
It was just because sexual health education was in the news again because there was a new curriculum. But
mm-hmm.
we have been teaching sexual health education for more than 40 years in some type of form, maybe not in a formalized curriculum, but we've always had public health nurses going into schools for decades, talking to kids about their sexual health. And parents have always had the option if they wanted to have their child removed from those classes. They always have had that option,
right.
And they continue to have that option with the 2015 curriculum. There will always be parents where even after the teachers talk to them or the principal speaks with them, they'll still choose for whatever personal reason that they do not want their child to learn that information. Our worry is that those kids tend to be the ones most at risk and most
right.
likely to find out that information just from an inaccurate source, like they'll go online or they'll talk to someone in the schoolyard,
right.
and then they won't have that accurate information.
You know, you're talking about people just being against any type of sex ed. It reminds me of a comment I saw online in a forum talking about the curriculum, and somebody just posed the question, like, is there any form of sex ed that is going to, that people are going to 100% get behind? And from what you're saying, and then what we're talking about is, like, there's really not, so why don't we go for the best kind of sex education?
Exactly, and I think, you know, we can just look to the United States. Like, they have a very very values-driven sexual health curriculum in many of the states where it was, you know, students were taught no sex before marriage. You will only have one sexual partner your entire life. Sex is for procreation only.
Right.
And because of that, they were not taught about birth control, about condoms, about consent.
Mm.
And, I mean, we have years of evidence where we were able to see the repercussions of those programs. We know that in those states, they had higher rates of teen pregnancy, higher rates of teen abortion. They had higher rates of STIs in schools. In fact, in some schools, they had full-on outbreaks of STIs because there was no prevention programming in place around providing comprehensive sexual health education. So when we put values into sex ed, it really does a disservice to students. We should be teaching them the facts, the evidence, the health information that they need. And then if parents want to be involved and want to share their values with their children, they have every right to do so. But the public school should not be a place where we're teaching or trying to instill
right.
those personal, moral, or religious values.
Well, I wanted to ask you that because that is the counterargument is that the curriculum and that teachers are sort of forcing parents out of the process. When you're talking about people who raise that concern, what is the role for parents in terms of working within the school system and trying to create kids who are going to be have healthy and informed attitudes about sex?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we at Shore Center believe that parents are the first educators. So we get in when parents, even before their children are born, we do sex ed workshops with parents to talk to them about how to be really early educators for their children about sexual health, preventing sexual abuse, relationships, consent. You can do all of those types of topics in age-appropriate ways, starting from birth. And so we strongly believe that parents need to be a partner in this education. We know that the role of parents will have a far greater influence on a child's behavior than what they're going to learn in an hour-long sex ed class once
right.
a year. They're going to learn a lot more from their parents and the influence of their parents. And so we really believe that parents need to be front and center in this. They need to be far more active than many of them are, and they need to be starting much earlier than they are. So we've done studies in partnership with Waterloo Region Public Health with parents, and even those parents who do have talks with their children, they're often doing it far later than would be age appropriate. And so there's always a concern that they're introducing things too early, but we know that the more information kids have, the earlier the better. They're going to make way healthier decisions, and they're going to avoid a lot of that confusion. So
right.
we know that kids are hitting puberty so much earlier than they were even 10 years ago. And so when a little girl gets her period and no one has talked to her about that,
right.
incredibly scary. Or if a boy thinks that their penis is supposed to look like a penis they saw on the internet, and it doesn't, they can feel a lot of body shame around that
right.
and their masculinity and think there's something wrong with them, even though they will grow. And someone needs to talk to them about that. Otherwise, they'll internalize that, they'll be afraid, and it'll create more stigma and long-term issues. And nobody wants a kid to have to deal with that, right? Like, we want kids to be happy in their bodies, to be proud of their bodies, and to let us know if there's a problem. And by being secretive about this or not having these conversations with them, we're just pushing things further and further underground. And then when there is an issue, they're not going to disclose. They're not going to talk to us about what's happening in their lives.
Yeah, it seems like it's being very sort of generationally driven in terms of, well, I was this age when I started thinking about these things, or this event happened to me, and perhaps people are just pushing things down the road when you know, there's, I think one of the arguments in the curriculum is that it suggests talking to kids and teaching kids about subjects that people thought should come a bit later in their education, when the reality is that everything's sort of being pushed forward in terms of when kids are dealing with certain issues.
Exactly. And you know what? It's fine. Like, for some students, maybe for your child, they may not be in a relationship. They may not be experiencing that type of pressure to become sexually active. But there's probably a kid in your child's class who is.
Mm.
And shouldn't we all be there for that child? And so when we talk to parents, we say it may not be your child specifically that's dealing with these issues, but there's likely a child in your child's class who is having these problems, who is going through puberty early, who may be being sexually abused at home, who may be in a new relationship and is being pressured to perform oral sex. You know, there could be things like that are happening right under our noses in our own neighborhoods. And shouldn't they have a safe person, a teacher, that they know they can talk to about what's going on, where they can get the help they need?
Right.
So it may not be, you know, their child specifically, but there's probably another child in that class that does need this information. And maybe they'll just need it in a couple of years, and it's not going to do any harm to them. You know, your child won't be harmed by learning about these topics. They'll just be better prepared, and they can talk to you about any concerns they might have. But we really think parents should be engaged. They should read the curriculum. On our website, we have a whole parent section with videos and all kinds of great content to encourage them, to make them feel comfortable to have these conversations.
Right.
We have a curated book list that we have reviewed all of these books. We have said at what age they would be appropriate at. And so, you know, we're there for the parents just as much as we are for teachers, so that they can be an active participant in their child's education.
Yeah, I appreciate all that. One of the things I've been thinking about, too, though, is that there seems to be, in a number of fields, people who doubt the science. You know, whether you're talking about anti-vaxxers or whether you're talking about climate change deniers, there's a subset of people who, no matter how much evidence you load them with, just sort of turn their head. They don't want to see it. They think it's a long con. Is part of that driving this here too, that there's, you know, people who just, you know, no matter how much evidence you or teachers or the ministry provide to say, you know, arming kids with knowledge about reproductive health and sexual health early and often leads them to have happier, more fulfilling lives later on. You know, is that just, you know, a wall that some people can't get over?
It's tough. It's tough. Because, you know, even when we show, so we have broken down the curriculum grade by grade, and even when we show exactly what will be taught in grade one, we've had people come right back and say, you're teaching kindergarten kids about anal sex.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be very clear, like, there is nothing until, like, grade eight about anal sex. And in mm-hmm. grade eight, all it says is that you can get an STI from anal sex. That's all it says. We're not
right.
teaching kids how to do it. We're letting them know that there are risks involved. It's difficult when people, you know, I think we are in like an anti-science kind of fake news
right.
era, where people, even when confronted with, you know, black and white evidence, you know, if they don't trust the source, if they feel like we have an agenda
right.
and a bias, and I'm not, I mean, we clearly do. We've been doing this work for 45
yeah.
years. We believe in it.
Right.
But even when we show them the evidence or even, you know, the curriculum documents, they, you know, not every time will they believe us. But often we are able to get through to these parents. We do run a number of groups, especially with newcomers, because they often have received they don't know. They're new to Canada.
Right.
And they don't know what happens in sex ed, and so it's not off the wall for them to think that we would do something like teach a grade one in about anal sex, right? Like
mm-hmm.
they don't know that wouldn't be normal in Canada. And
mm-hmm.
so when we go through the curriculum documents with them grade by grade, you know, they're far less likely to pull their kid out of the class.
Right.
We're not able to convince every parent, but you know, we do our best to kind of sit down, understand what their fears are, what their concerns are, recognize that they do have very strong values about sexuality, about relationships, and that is fine. And we absolutely respect that. We just want kids to have the facts.
Right.
And however that plays out, maybe they don't need that until they're married, but at least they'll know when they're married about the different anatomy. That's important. If they want to become pregnant, they'll understand the menstrual cycle and issues with fertility. They'll understand where sperm comes from. You know, these are all basic life skills that we need to have as a species.
Right.
And so it's really important that kids do get this information from a trusted adult, not Googling online or hearing it on the playground.
Right. And just because you're married, it doesn't mean consent doesn't still come into play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we need consent in all areas of our lives.
Right.
And you know, not just in sexual relationships, in all kinds of areas of our work and in our communities, the idea of consent. You know, this is also where I think, you know, the canceling of the writing sessions for the Indigenous curriculum also, I think this is very connected. You know, this idea, the connection between colonization and consent and autonomy of people, and respect for others and respect for differences. You know, the curriculums are very connected, and I feel like it is sort of an attack on this progressive idea around human rights that has happened with this new government.
Yeah. I want to look to the future a bit, because I'm not sure if you've had time to see it. As we're recording this, it just came out a couple hours ago that the Ontario government is looking to do big consultation on all areas of education, including making a Bill of Rights for parents. What I'm wondering about is when Doug Ford talks about doing the biggest consultation ever in Ontario on sex ed curriculum, I'm wondering what you think the odds are that their findings are going to be completely different from the 4,000 some odd people who were consulted before the curriculum was updated in 2015.
Yeah, it really does depend on how they weigh the feedback. So I think that sort of conservative base, regressive base of people has been riled up. They've got a win here. And so I think they will be organized and they will come out in full force to these consultations across the province. We'll certainly be organized as well, and ensuring that parents who do support their children getting the facts at school will also be present at these consultations. I'm worried it will just become a political showdown, essentially,
right,
in these meetings, which is not, I mean, that doesn't do anybody any good. I don't think there will be much actual dialogue between the two sides, unfortunately, where we could come to a place where we recognize the differences that we have, but also put students and their safety first. You know, I think even people on the religious right also want their children protected from sexual abuse or from human trafficking. And I think, you know, there could be some common ground that we could develop together, recognizing, you know, respecting of differences. You know, I think the grade 3 portion of the curriculum where we talk about respecting the differences of different people is not just about LGBTQ families. We're also talking about Muslim families that might look different or other types of families or grandparent-led families. That's what children are being taught, and to respect people's differences and
right,
to not bully someone because they might look different or speak with an accent. And I think we could find some real common ground with some of the communities that are opposed to the curriculum if we were really able to sit down and meet with people and kind of go through what are the fears. Because I think this is very fear-based.
Right.
And nobody cares more about anything in the world than their child, their child's safety. And so I think, you know, we can come together around this. I don't think the consultations will be set up for that.
Right.
I think it'll be very much like an us-them process, which I'm very disappointed about. I wish we could, you know, have time to come together and work together through this because, you know, in our work with parents, when we take the time to listen to where they're coming from and share with them why we care so much about this work and, you know, how much it will protect their child, they do come around. But it takes time, and
right,
I don't think that's going to be built in here.
Right.
And it really will be, you know, the anti-choice, anti-LGBTQ groups, the Focus on the Family, the Campaign Life Coalition, the Right to Life groups. They will be the ones organizing. And, you know, in my years of activism. They've never been really open to discussion with, you know, having the two sides coming together. So I'm worried about what will happen with the consultation, how different views will be weighted as far as, you know, what is evidence, what is not evidence.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, like, this has to be about the children. It's not about my rights or a parent's right. This is about the children's right and kids' rights. And children do have a fundamental human right through the United Nations to accurate sexual health education.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually hopefully going to be part of a challenge to the UN about this, because it is an infringement on their human rights not to have access to this accurate sexual health information and to have that ripped away from them.
Right. In so much as we try not to do predictions, I am trying to think about how all this sort of comes out in the wash. Do we get a more regressive sex ed out of these consultations, and then what happens next? Do we elect a new government that is more progressive thinking, and then bring back the previous more progressive sex ed, because, you know, that's harming the kids too in terms of yoking them around and in mm-hmm. terms of the information they're getting, and even just what we're seeing right now from the provincial government, the uncertainty they're creating in terms of what is going to be taught in a couple of weeks. It just seems like the process isn't going to be good for the people this is supposed to be about, which is the kids.
Exactly, yeah. I have no idea what will happen and whether or not they'll even come up with a curriculum. This, like, they call it the 2015 curriculum, but to be honest, I mean, it had been written for years, and it was shelved in 2010, I believe, because of the same outrage. And then it was reintroduced again in 2015, and it held strong until up to this point. To be honest, it's already out of date.
Mm.
You know, things have changed so much since it was first written. And I think, you know, we can't just press pause on the way things are changing in the world. Access to technology has changed everything. Like, people are maintaining relationships online, they're starting relationships online, they're having their relationships almost entirely online, including their sexual relationships. So the idea that we can just pretend that's not happening is putting our children at so much risk, because we know that's, it's not just where their relationships are, it also happens to be where predators are,
right,
and where human traffickers are as well. And if we're not having those conversations with children, then we're just essentially feeding them to the wolves, in my opinion. So I'm quite fearful, you know, if they press pause on this, if they revert back to 1998 and then they take years of consultation, you know, if they win another government, like, I don't know how long it will take, but in the meantime, because of the way the curriculum is set up, every year builds upon the previous year. It builds up knowledge. So you learn about anatomy and puberty, and then you learn about birth control. And you can't learn about birth control if you don't know about the menstrual cycle.
Right.
They're connected. You can't learn about condoms if you don't know where sperm come from. You know,
right.
These are all the knowledge builds on the previous years. So when you take a break or you revert back 20 years, you're breaking that knowledge and that building up of the foundation of knowledge that kids need to have before they get to high school. For some kids, it's grade 7, grade 8, but for most kids, they really become more sexual in high school, and they need to have all of this information before they get there. And the 1998 curriculum just won't give it to them. So I'm very concerned that we're going to go back to seeing a higher rate of teen pregnancy. We've been very fortunate, at least in our community, we've seen a significant drop in teen pregnancy over the past several years, and my concern is that trend is going to change because students just won't have this information.
Okay, well, that's great. I very much appreciate your time, Lindsay. Thank you so much for appearing on the podcast and talking all this out.
Thanks so much for having me on.
And once again, that was Lindsay Butcher, the Executive Director of the Shore Center in Kitchener. For more information about their services and programs, you can go to shorecenter.ca. And as for the state of sex education in Ontario, I guess we will have to stay tuned to see what happens there. And that's it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics at Sid Dale. The host for the Guelph Politicast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes. And while you're there, you can also listen to Open Source's Guelph. If you missed last Thursday's episode on CFRU, you can download it via the Politicast channel on Podbean. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson. You can go to the Guelph Politico Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And you can donate to Guelph Politico on Patreon at patreon.com/guelphpolitico. If you like locally sourced independent media in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca, where we will have a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you shortly. And until then, see you next time.